Welcome to On The Moneyline, a podcast by MMA Play 365. I'm Newsom, and I'm here to break down UFC 294, which goes down this weekend back in Abu Dhabi. It's a super card. We've got two amazing fights at the top of the card. Two fights that actually fell through last week. Last week, at least at the end of last week, it was full of news and replacements and the excitement for this card, in my opinion, I think has just grown dramatically from what it already was because, look, I don't know if this is a hot take or not, but it's just my opinion. I actually think that the two fights in the main event and the co-main event that we've got right now are better than the original two fights that we were going to have in the main event and the co-main event. Badass fighters stepping up, Kamaru Usman on short notice, Alexander Volkanovski on short notice, both saved the card, but man, like I said, in my opinion, both much better fights, much more intriguing fights. And even from the betting perspective, the odds on both fights are much shorter than what they were for the previous opponent. So again, kind of backs up my hot take or not hot take opinion, basically saying that the fights are much better because the fights are going to be much closer, much more competitive than the original ones, in my opinion. So like I said, it's a super card. I can't wait to get into it. I can't wait to get into the breakdowns. From a betting perspective, though, it's going to be a tough one. There's a lot of juice, there's a lot of chalk on the betting lines, and you know, trying to find value on this one is going to be tougher than your usual card, but you know, finding value is what I do. So before we get into the breakdowns, as always, there's going to be a Baze AI recap from last weekend's event at UFC Vegas 81. The straight pick prediction accuracy wasn't too high last week, if I'm being honest, but there's still a couple of really good solid predictions from Baze AI. It's going to be more of an education piece in regards to talking about where there was value. There is also one bad prediction as well, which is very rare, but again, I'll be covering that. So if you are interested in the recaps, if you are interested in AI for UFC and MMA, make sure that you check that out, and it'll be on our YouTube channel under a Baze AI specific playlist. And listen, you'll always make good bets with Baze AI in the long run. So yeah, if you're interested in AI, make sure you check that out. Jump over to our YouTube channel. Don't forget to drop a subscription on it as well. Always much appreciated. And without any further ado, let's get going. That's why you're all here. You want the breakdowns, you want the predictions for the supercard. And we're going to start in that main event for the UFC Lightweight Championship, the rematch between Islam Makhachev and Alexander Volkanovski. And like I said in the introduction, man, what a G. Alexander Volkanovski is stepping in on 10 days notice or 11 days notice, whatever it is, to fight Islam Makhachev in Abu Dhabi. And before you get into any stylistic breakdowns, before we, you know, talk about the last time that they both fought, this is a big risk for Alexander Volkanovski because he was going to get this rematch regardless if and when he wanted it, which again, I would say less of the if and more of the when. He was going to get this rematch just because of how good the last fight was, how close the last fight was. He was always going to get that rematch. However, he's taking this fight on short notice. And listen, if he goes into Saturday night and he loses this main event, he won't get this opportunity again, at least not in my opinion. And he might not want it again. But if he does want it again, he'll have been 0-2 against Islam Makhachev as a featherweight champion. I just don't think he gets the opportunity again. So it's a risk because for Volkanovski, he probably would have wanted this next and potentially only other opportunity is going to get to rematch Islam Makhachev on a full camp. So he's not had a full camp. I believe he's coming off a slight injury as well. So with the short notice against, you know, the best lightweight in the world, it's a big risk to take because, like I say, if he doesn't get the win, he likely doesn't get this opportunity again. And again, it just speaks to how much of, you know, a badass Alexander Volkanovski is. But look, getting into this fight, we've seen these two match up before, both on a full camp at lightweight for the lightweight championship. It was a very close decision. There's a lot of people arguing that Volkanovski should have won the fight. But look, in my opinion, I did think Makhachev won the fight, but I would never argue too hard with anybody about that. It was one of those really close fights that could have possibly gone either way. And I don't think you can complain either way either. You know, it's a close fight and someone's got to win and someone's got to lose. And, you know, replace the three judges on the night with another three and then another three over the space of a few fights and you might get different decisions on the scorecard. So it's just one of those fights where it's just super close. Somebody had to win, somebody had to lose. And, you know, the judges edged it to Islam Makhachev on the night. So that's where we're at. And we saw a lot in that fight as well. You know, over five rounds, we saw knockdowns, we saw takedowns from both sides. It was just a really good fight, mixed martial arts fight, filled with a little bit of everything. And like I say, in my opinion, Makhachev came out on top only just. But I kind of feel that Makhachev knows what Volkanovski is going to bring to the table. And I'm not saying that Makhachev wasn't taking Volkanovski seriously or anything like that. I would never say that. But I just think there was an element of, you know, being a little bit unsure of how Volkanovski can perform at lightweight. Is he going to be better than the other lightweight challengers and the other lightweight fighters that Makhachev's fought? And I actually think that Makhachev got a bit of a surprise on the night. I think that Volkanovski was better than what he thought he was going to be. And that can only build on for this fight with Makhachev. I think that Makhachev is, again, it's going to be one of those fights where Volkanovski's going to have his moments. He's definitely going to win a round. He might win two rounds. One of the other rounds might be close. I just think it's going to be another somewhat close fight. But I think that where Makhachev maybe dropped a round or two last time and where the fight was a little bit closer than what he might have wanted to, I think he's going to tidy that up, if that makes sense. I think that in the rounds that were super close last time, I think that Makhachev can be a bit more defined this time. I think he knows what to expect from Volkanovski this time. There's going to be no surprises for him. And like I say, I just feel that Makhachev is going to come in here. He's going to do what he normally does. I think he's going to strike well. It's going to be competitive. I think he's going to have to, you know, give a little, take a little in this fight. But ultimately, when it comes down to the strength, the wrestling, I just think that Makhachev's going to be a little bit better, a little bit more prepared this time. They've already stepped in the cage before, so he knows what needs to be tweaked and how to do things a little bit better. And like I said already a couple of times, there's going to be no surprises. And you can make the same argument for Volkanovski. Volkanovski knows what Makhachev feels like. He knows what a strong lightweight feels like. He knows what the wrestling's like. But like I said, coming in on short notice, a little bit less prepared. Again, that injury that may or may not have any sort of effect in this fight. I just feel that in Abu Dhabi as well, over at that side of the world, I feel like there's a little bit more upside on Islam Makhachev for this fight than what there was last time. Aside from that, again, a bit of mystery in regards to what Volkanovski is going to look like and perform like at lightweight. So, yeah, look, I'm expecting another competitive fight. A Volkanovski fight will never be anything other than competitive, at least when he's not on that winning side, if that makes sense. Obviously, Volkanovski can go in there and destroy anybody, but it's very rare that you see anybody come and get the better of Volkanovski, you know, easily. It's going to have to be a job that's worked hard from Islam Makhachev's perspective. But like I said, I think that Makhachev is going to have made the relevant adjustments himself, coming off a full camp this side of the world. I feel that the wrestling can be implemented a little bit more, again, with those adjustments that were made. Again, I also think Makhachev thought he would be able to run through Volkanovski last time from a wrestling perspective. He was met with a bit of a brick wall, had to adjust inside the cage, and I kind of think, again, that might have played a part into why it was so close. But this time, I just think that the really, really close rounds that happened last time, I still think we're going to get close and competitive rounds, but I think Makhachev can put more of a stamp on it than he could last time out. So for those reasons, I'm picking Islam Makhachev to win and still the UFC lightweight champion. And in the next fight, the co-main event, this is another badass fight from two badass fighters. We've got Kamaru Usman versus Khamzat Chimaev. Khamzat Chimaev stepping up to middleweight, I believe moving there permanently. We'll see what the future holds. And obviously Kamaru Usman stepping up in weight as well to take the fight on short notice, which is actually going to be great for both fighters because, look, Hamzat's had some issues on the scales and Kamaru Usman, he's a big dude, and coming in on 10 days notice or 9 days notice or whatever it was, you know, he's not having to cut too much weight either. So I actually think that this is perfect for both fighters to fight at middleweight and not have too much weight to cut and both be more at an optimal performance from that weight perspective. And like I say, look, Khamzat Chimaev's got a bit of a different opponent here. I think it's a harder opponent for him. You know, he was supposed to fight Paulo Costa. Costa, you know, was removed with the staph infection, not cleared to fight. So I actually think Khamzat would have completely and utterly ran through Costa. I don't think that, look, if Costa had landed something hard and knocked him out, it would have been something had to have been something spectacular, flash KO type of thing. And look, Chimaev's tough, he can take a punch. And yeah, I just look, outside of that puncher's chance, which kind of gets elevated with a fighter like Paulo Costa, I really don't think that he would have had too much for Khamzat in regards to the wrestling. Now, Kamaru Usman's a little bit different. So Usman is a fighter that will have something for Khamzat Chimaev in regards to the wrestling. Now, there are those question marks of, look, how effective is Usman going to be wrestling in every single fight because of the knees? It's an issue that's been reported, you know, numerous times that, you know, he's got issues with his knees. So the some explosivity in regards to the takedowns, the entries are not as effective as what they were earlier in his career. However, you look at his last two fights, he's scored plenty of takedowns. And against Leon Edwards as well, who's a good wrestler himself. So, yeah, and in regards to the wrestling, I do think Kamaru Usman can still wrestle. It's just I'm not 100% sure how effective that wrestling's going to be against somebody like Chimaev, who is, like I said, an elite wrestler. He's got that Dagestani wrestling, that Russian wrestling, and he's deceptively strong as well. Like, Kamaru Usman's going to look massive inside the cage, in my opinion, when you compare him to Chimaev. But Chimaev just has this strength and this physicality about him that's, in my opinion, just going to be unrivaled. And I think he's going to be able to rag Usman about a little bit. I think he is going to be able to score takedowns on Usman. Obviously, Usman, I'm pretty sure Usman had like 100% takedown defense before he fought Leon Edwards the first time. Leon took him down. So I'm not saying because Leon took him down, Chimaev's definitely going to be able to take him down for that reason. I just, look, even if he came into this fight with 100% takedown defense, I still think Chimaev is going to be able to get a hold of him, is going to be able to take him down, and is going to be able to have his way with him. Look, maybe Usman scores a takedown or two himself, but I really don't think that once these guys start wrestling, I think that it's Chimaev that's going to get the better of Usman. On the feet, striking, I think Usman's got the power advantage. I think Chimaev's probably going to be a little bit longer in regards to the strikes, the straight punches. But I don't think Chimaev is going to come into this fight and stand and box with Usman like he did with Burns. Regardless of what Chimaev would say, I do think there was a little bit of hesitation against Gilbert Burns in regards to taking down somebody who is an elite BJJ black belt. You know, it's no secret Burns is deadly on the mat. And I do feel that even though Chimaev probably would have been absolutely fine on the mat for 15 minutes with Burns in regards to not getting submitted, I do think there was some hesitancy in regards to just fighting smart. And I think Chimaev actually used that fight to put a barn burner on and, you know, really elevate the hype that he's got behind him. Whereas this fight, I don't think he's going to have any concerns whatsoever in regards to the jiu-jitsu of Usman. I think he'll be able to take Usman down and remain safe. I don't think he's going to get swept, reversed armbarred. I don't think he's going to get triangled or omoplated or any of the defensive submissions or, you know, the, like I say, the sweeps, the transitions, the position reversal. I just don't think that's going to be a thing. I think if Chimaev takes Usman down, he's going to be able to work on top, potentially look for submissions himself, land ground and pound. Every time Usman stands back up, I think Chimaev will be able to take him back down. The one thing I will say in regards to cardio is if Usman can stretch this fight late and Chimaev comes out like a bull out of the traps at 100 miles an hour, then I think the cardio of Usman could potentially help him take over the fight late and we might see a massive upset here. But personally, and look, what I'm about to say is definitely a hot take, and it's a prediction that I'm making based on every single supercard, every single pay-per-view, or pretty much all of them. You always have that one moment, that one thing that everybody talks about the day after the fight, the one really shocking or surprising outcome. For example, when Jorge Masvidal flying kneed Ben Askren, you know, that was the thing that people spoke about afterwards. I kind of feel that we're going to have a moment in this event on this card, and I think it's going to happen in this fight. And what I think is going to happen, my prediction for that, is Chimaev comes out fast. He takes Usman down early. I think Usman might even start to stand up to, you know, get up onto his knees and start to stand up. I think he gets ragdolled a little bit, and I think Chimaev actually finishes Usman in round one, whether it's ground and pound or finds a submission as Usman's trying to scramble out of a bad position. I think Chimaev's going to be more suited to the middleweight division with the weight. I think, like I said, he's deceptive. I know he's deceptively strong. I know he's going to be able to pick Usman up and take him down if that's what he wants to do. And I kind of feel that he's going to be overwhelming Usman way too much in that first round. And like I say, I think the hot take, the prediction, is that Chimaev takes Usman out in that first round, makes more of a statement than anyone could possibly imagine, and then potentially fights for the title, the middleweight championship after that. So based on that hot take, based on that prediction, I'm picking Khamzat Chimaev to win this fight. And in the next fight, we've got Magomed Ankalaev versus Johnny Walker. And this is a really interesting one from the Johnny Walker perspective. And it's always interesting when it's Johnny Walker, because he does have that crazy athletic, powerful ability just to be able to spring up and find a knockout out of absolutely nowhere, unorthodox knockouts. And he's just one of those that you never, this level against someone like Magomed Ankalaev, who, in my opinion, Ankalaev's still the best light heavyweight fighter in the world. I think that once he gets another chance at that title, I think he performs better. I think that he'll win the belt on the next title fight that he has. But in this fight, in regards to Johnny Walker, it's still one of those where if Walker comes out here, lands a flying knee or some jump roundhouse kick or some spin kick, or just catches Ankalaev with a hard straight punch or a big hook, or, you know, the multitude of ways that you can knock somebody out, I just wouldn't be overly surprised, just because Johnny Walker has that crazy athletic, powerful ability to be able to do that to anybody. Nobody's safe from that, and it's just about how you game plan against it. And the thing is with Magomed Ankalaev is, look, Ankalaev is a tough Russian, good striker, good wrestler, good topside grappler, and I just feel that he, outside of that crazy flash KO that Johnny Walker's got as a path to victory, if you like, if you can even call it a path to victory, I just think Ankalaev's better everywhere. From a technical striking standpoint, Ankalaev's better both offensively and defensively. When you're looking at the wrestling, that's Ankalaev all day long. The grappling is Ankalaev all day long. And it's really tough to see Johnny Walker win this fight outside the flash KO. And even in regards to the flash KO, he probably has a small window of opportunity to do it. Now, Walker has looked a little better in regards to his cardio in some fights than what we've seen previously in his career, or should I say earlier in his career, but I still think that he's going to have to work hard against Ankalaev. So if this fight does go late, I do think Ankalaev's going to be better the longer the fight goes on. And personally, I think Ankalaev's going to come out here. I think he's going to be really defensive from a striking perspective early in this fight, just to get his reads. But I think once he's got his reads, I think he'll start letting his hands go a little bit too much. Not a little bit too much, just a good amount. I actually think a lot of people are going to expect Ankalaev to come into this fight and wrestle heavily, just to take away that, or just to take away any chance of Johnny Walker finding that flash KO. But what I actually think is going to happen is, look, I'm not saying there's going to be no wrestling in this fight, but like I say, I think Ankalaev is going to be really defensive on the feet first. I don't think he's going to shell up or anything, but just be really smart, mind his P's and Q's. And I think once he gets his reads down, he's going to then start going to the striking. I think he's going to start putting combinations together. I think he's going to back Johnny Walker up, and I think he'll potentially knock him out on the feet. Like I said, for me, if I'm Ankalaev, I go down there and I take him down and control it on the mat. But we've seen it from Ankalaev before. He had that path to victory, in my opinion, against Iwan Kutalaba, who at the time wasn't using his wrestling. Iwan Kutalaba was coming out hot, heavy, swinging bombs and knocking people out. And Ankalaev ignored the wrestling, where he would have had big advantages, in my opinion, and went in there and knocked him out. And I think that we're going to see the same thing again in this fight with Johnny Walker. I think that Walker's going to try the spin attacks, the elbows, the flying knees early on. I think it's going to be ineffective against the defensive Ankalaev, who then starts piling it on the, you know, after those crazy strikes have come. And I think Ankalaev finds a devastating finish on the feet. So for those reasons, I'm picking Magomed Ankalaev to win this fight. And in the next fight, we've got Ikram Aliskerov versus Wally Alves. And again, we've got to give props to Wally Alves as well. This is another fight that has happened on short notice in regards to, look, Aliskerov was always on this card, but it's Wally Alves stepping in on short notice. And Aliskerov's actually had a couple of fights lined up on this card, with a couple of fighters having to pull out. One of them, I believe, Paulo Costa as well. I'm pretty sure Costa was supposed to fight Aliskerov, but then Costa stepped up to fight Chimaev instead and then pulled out regardless. So after Aliskerov lost the Costa fight, which in my opinion was still a really good fight, although a massive step up in competition for your second fight in the UFC, the UFC actually matched Aliskerov against Nassourdine Imavov, who again, it's a big name for your second fight in the UFC, but Imavov pulled out, so Aliskerov is still left without an opponent. Wally Alves steps in on short notice. Aliskerov, obviously no problems fighting anybody at this point. So look, props to Aliskerov for, you know, remaining on the card and just saying yes to whoever the UFC have offered him. And props to Wally Alves as well, because there wouldn't have been many fighters with their hands up ready to step up against Aliskerov in Abu Dhabi on this type of stage, in regards to just fighting somebody who is known for being that typical high-level elite Russian with crazy good wrestling, good striking, the combat sambo, the hand-to-hand combat, all these master of sports that every Russian at the highest level seems to have. So yeah, look, it's a tough fight for Wally Alves, and Aliskerov, I don't even think this is an opinion that anybody will disagree with. Aliskerov has actually ended up with an easier opponent than any of his previous two, but what's strange is Wally Alves is probably the right opponent for your second UFC fight, not a Paulo Costa, not a Nassourdine Imavov. So it just shows you, and I've said this phrase a few times, this word a few times on this podcast already, but it shows you how much of a badass Aliskerov is by stepping in and wanting to fight Paulo Costa and Nassourdine Imavov for his second UFC fight. This is actually probably the right, the better, not better match, but the right matched fight for Aliskerov on his second UFC fight. But like I said, regardless, no disrespect to Alves whatsoever, but obviously he's not at the level of Imavov and Paulo Costa. So look, Aliskerov has got to mind his P's and Q's with Alves in this fight for two reasons. Alves does hit hard. We have seen him knock fighters out. We have seen Alves win by submission against big names like Colby Covington, guillotined him, and Alves is a legit BJJ black belt. So Alves is one of these real finishing upside type of guys that have got power, that will throw heat on every punch, on every kick, just because he normally doesn't care if you take him down, because he's got world-class jiu-jitsu as well. But with Aliskerov, I think as long as he minds his P's and Q's in this fight, I don't see him having too many issues. I think he's going to be the better wrestler. He's definitely going to be the better wrestler, but when it gets to the grappling topside, I think that his grappling topside is heavy, it's smothering. I think that the topside wrestling from Aliskerov is going to nullify the jiu-jitsu game of Wally Alves on the mat, I think, in regards to the strike. And I think Aliskerov is probably a little bit more technical. But like I said, he's just got to mind his P's and Q's that the bombs are going to come from Wally Alves in this fight. Wally Alves, I think, is going to come out hard and fast, knowing that he's probably got a small window of opportunity to get Aliskerov out of there. But even if Aliskerov is a little bit overwhelmed with, you know, Wally Alves coming out like a bull, if you like, I just think he's going to be able to get a hold of him. I think he's going to be able to take him down. He's the one with the full camp. He's the one that's been preparing for elite level opponents. And I just, again, out of a flash finish, a flash knockout, normally I would say flash finish with the grappling, but I really don't see him submitting Aliskerov at all, unless it's a really like low percentage guillotine that Alves drops for. Aliskerov has a moment of madness where he makes a crazy mistake. I just don't see a flash KO. I don't see a flash submission. I do think Aliskerov's going to be able to control the early moments of the fights where he's got to weather a storm and just be able to come through that and use his offense to nullify the offense of Alves. I think that's how Aliskerov's going to approach this fight. And if and when Wally Alves comes out hard, I don't see Aliskerov losing here. So for those reasons, I'm picking Ikram Aliskerov to win this fight. And in the next fight, we've got Saeed Nurmagomedov versus Muin Gafurov. Now, pretty much every hardcore fan is going to know who Saeed Nurmagomedov is. Most casuals might even know Nurmagomedov at this point as well. But for those that don't, he actually isn't your typical Russian in regards to, you know, the relentless wrestling, the heavy top pressure. Saeed Nurmagomedov is predominantly a striker, a kickboxer, very technical, good moving forwards, good moving backwards. The only slight knock I have with Saeed Nurmagomedov is that he probably spins a little bit too much with the spin back fist, the spin kicks. And if he does fight somebody that's a great wrestler offensively, then he will land himself in trouble, because when you spin, you show your back. And if the opponent times that, then of course they can get a body lock and take it down. Now, Muin Gafarov does have some wrestling, so he might be in a situation where he gets Saeed Nurmagomedov down a couple of times. Maybe he does, you know, read one of the spins and gets him down that way. But the thing is with Gafarov, I don't think that he has the best top control in regards to that smothering top heavy pressure type of grappling. I think he can get takedowns, but more often than not, his opponents can get back up to the feet. And look, Nurmagomedov, even though he's a striker, he can still wrestle and grapple defensively. Like, look at the Kakramonov fight. You know, I bet Kakramonov in that fight, you know, disappointed with how it ended when he was completely controlling things, but look how hard Kakramonov had to fight to get Nurmagomedov down all those times, to settle Nurmagomedov. Those first 3-4 takedowns were either defended, or if Nurmagomedov did get taken down by Kakramonov, he was getting back up to his feet. And Kakramonov really had to work hard. Like, I'm shocked he didn't gas out. But the thing is, Nurmagomedov's got dangerous front chokes as well. So this is the thing for Muin Gafarov. Like, Gafarov, from a striking perspective, he can be a little bit wild. He can come forwards and wing. And I think that plays into Saeed Nurmagomedov's game a little bit, because he is technical and can fight on the back foot and then just throw strikes out, really short combinations, maybe even one punch at a time or a couple of punches, and just nullify what Gafarov's doing from an offensive perspective. Then if Gafarov decides that, look, I'm not winning the striking and I'm going to try and take him down, then that's going to be difficult. But then if he does take him down, either Saeed Nurmagomedov's going to get right back up and that takedown won't have counted for anything at all, or Muin Gafarov's going to risk Saeed Nurmagomedov grabbing a hold of a front choke, ninja choke, darce choke, anaconda, and you know, one of the main front chokes, and being able to submit him. So I kind of feel that Gafarov's in not a great position in this fight. And also, when you look at, like, Saeed Nurmagomedov, like, that loss against Jonathan Martinez now is actually doesn't look that bad at all. Like, Jonathan Martinez is legit, and we know that now. And when you look at Muin Gafarov, he's lost two fights under the UFC banner to fighters that aren't anywhere close to the level of Saeed Nurmagomedov. And Saeed Nurmagomedov has beaten fighters that aren't close to Muin Gafarov's level. So, yeah, I just think it's not a great fight for Gafarov. He might have some moments in this fight and he might get a little bit excited, throwing a punch. He might connect on one of them and think, right, he's got Saeed Nurmagomedov. But when you look at the striking, I think Nurmagomedov's the better striker technically, both offensively, defensively, moving forwards, moving backwards. And from a wrestling perspective, I think the defensive wrestling, the defensive grappling is going to be enough to nullify the offensive wrestling and grappling of Gafarov as well. So for those reasons, I'm picking Saeed Nurmagomedov to win this fight. And in the next fight, we've got Tim Elliott versus Mohammad Mokaev. Mohammad Mokaev, of course, still this hyped flyweight fighter, and rightly so, in my opinion. Look, he's had a couple of sketchy moments in fights where you think, you know, and I know there's people out there waiting to fade Mohammad Mokaev, waiting for that time to, you know, bet against him big and in a fight where he's a massive favourite and he should win and then comes up short. And look, Tim Elliott's a grappler. He's a nightmare to deal with. He's very experienced, definitely more experienced than Mokaev. He's fought for UFC championship fights. So it's like, I get it. I get the Tim Elliott angle. But I just don't think that it's going to be Tim Elliott that gets Mohammad Mokaev. The other thing you've got to understand is, look, yes, like I said, Mokaev's had his moments in fights where, you know, you're thinking, oh, he's going to get finished and, you know, he toughs it out. There were moments against Malcolm Gordon, which doesn't paint a great picture for Mohammad Mokaev. There was obviously that knee bar against Jafel Filio. And he got through them. And this is part of the learning curve for Mokaev. There are always going to be moments for all these hyped fighters that do have legit quality, legit skill sets, legit, and that are legit talents. There's always going to be fights where there's going to be that one moment where people are just focusing so much on that one moment and forgetting the bigger picture, that Mohamed Mokaev is a young, improving fighter that is still unbeaten. He's got through those moments where they were scary, moments of adversity, and that's what you want to see for a fighter on the rise. I think that Mokaev is the better technical striker in this fight. I think Tim Elliott's crazier. He's definitely going to be a challenge for Mokaev, because Mokaev won't have ever fought anybody like Elliott. But with that being said, pretty much every Tim Elliott opponent can say that about Tim Elliott, that they've never fought anybody like him until they've fought him. And Tim Elliott's 19 and 12, so he's lost 12 fights. I just don't think that Mokaev is going to be a fighter that Tim Elliott is going to be able to beat over the course of three rounds. I think if Tim Elliott wins, he might have to try and get him out of there. But we've seen that Mohamed Mokaev will let his legs snap in half if it means him winning the fight. And he still came back and finished Jafel Filio after that happened with his knee as well. Look, for me, I think Mokaev's a fighter that is destined for the top. I think we're always going to get this where we're really looking under a magnifying glass at some of the very slight mistakes that he's making in fights. But those real slight mistakes are always overcome. And as a young fighter, you have to expect that. As a 9-0 super young fighter that's still learning his game, and he's learning it at the highest level in the UFC, from fight to fight, he's going to look better and better. I think this is a good step up in competition, and one that Mokaev should win. I think he'll pass the test, and then it'll be on to the next one, the next big step up in competition. And look, I'm not saying Mokaev is going to go all the way to become a champion without taking a loss. I think he's about to... Well, in this fight with Tim Elliott, he's entering a completely different level of fighter than he's had in his last two fights against Filio and against Malcolm Gordon. Tim Elliott is levels above those guys. But I think it's the level that Mohamed Mokaev needs at this point to scalp good wins over. And at some point, he's going to step up again. And like I say, I think he might have a step up too soon at some point and take that loss, but that loss will probably be good for him. I just don't think that loss is here against Tim Elliott. So for those reasons, I'm picking Mohamed Mokaev to win this fight. And in the next fight, we've got Mohamed Yahya versus Trevor Peak. This is an interesting fight. Like, Yahya actually opened up the favourite. Look, Trevor Peak last time out against Chepe Mariscal, like, what a fight. I think they got robbed of not getting a performance bonus for that fight, because it was absolutely insane. And it was one of those fights that takes years off your fighting career as well. So the fact that he wasn't rewarded for it is, you know, a little bit, like I say, I think it was a little bit harsh. Like, it was a phenomenal fight that everybody enjoyed. And that's what Trevor Peak brings to the table. But without being, you know, disrespectful, I'm not going to discredit Trevor Peak as a UFC fighter, and, you know, he's still having fights in the UFC, but he is what you would describe as a brawler, a street fighter, and he isn't too technical in regards to, you know, having that technical skill set. Like, obviously he's going to be more technical than somebody off the street, but against a UFC quality fighter, he's definitely someone that will just go in there and swing bombs, hoping one sticks and hits and knocks them out. And that's the type of fighter he is. He does have some wrestling. He does have some grappling. And the dude has got a gas tank as well. Like, yes, he gassed out in that last fight, but look at the fight. Like, he should have gassed way harder than he did. And he was getting taken down, having to work defensively wrestling. And he was still getting back up to his feet in moments as well. So, like, the dude has some quality. It's just, he's hard to trust when it comes to picking fights. And, like, you look at the betting lines now, by the way, the betting lines are flipped. Like, the money's coming on Trevor Peak as an underdog, and I kind of get it. Like, the dude is going to fight for your money. That's all you can ask for as a gambler. Like, the money that you're putting on fighters, you want your fighter to not quit. You want your fighter to show heart, toughness, always be looking for the knockout, and fight for your money. Have that dog inside you. And that describes Trevor Peak. However, because the line's flipped and now Yahya's the underdog, like, I kind of feel like Yahya's the right side now. Like, yeah, I get the Trevor Peak at plus money, but now Mohamed Yahya is a fighter that, you know, he's well-rounded, he's got decent striking, he's got decent wrestling, he's got decent grappling. He's like a lesser version of Chepe Mariscal in regards to, you know, pace and skill set. Like, I don't think he's as good as Mariscal, but he's very similar in regards to just being well-rounded, is what I'm trying to say. He's got power, he can be hurt himself, we've seen both sides to him, but like I said, for a fighter that is well-rounded, that is very calm and patient, that's the type of fighter that I think is always going to perform better against a fighter like Trevor Peak. So, like I say, I completely get the bets on Trevor Peak, as long as they are small, because like I said, there's big risks that come with Trevor Peak. I do get those small plus money bets on Peak, but now the line's flipped, I do think that Yaya is the right side. And when it comes to actually picking a fight, you know, forget the odds for a second, I'm always going to side with the guy who I think is more technical, more composed, more relaxed, more patient, rather than the guy that's going to come out hot, hard, and tire out very fast because of the pace that he puts on. So for those reasons, I'm picking Muhammad Yaya to win this fight. In the next fight, we've got Javid Basharat versus Victor Henry. This is another cool fight as well. Look, the Basharat brothers are absolute savages. They're so good with the striking, so good wrestling, so good grappling. They've got all the calmness, relaxed composure that you could ever wish for in a fighter. The fundamentals are sound. They have power in accumulation of strikes. They've got that dangerous submission game as well. They're training at a great gym at Extreme Couture around the right people as well. Like, the Basharat brothers are just really, really good. But they're one of these types of fighters that are so good that they're just so hard to beat. Like, their offense is great, and they'll win plenty of fights because they're being aggressive, because they're, you know, putting their game plan into a fight and being able to beat their opponents. But the other side to winning is losing, and it's just really hard to see where these... I'll focus more on Javid Basharat. Like I say, they're both very similar in styles, but like, it's just very hard to see where Javid Basharat is going to lose a fight. Like, it's going to be up in the top 10, the top 15 that are going to give Basharat the fights that are going to give him a good chance of losing, if that makes sense. And even then, by the time Basharat's up in the rankings and fighting the top 10, he's going to be more improved and developed. Like, he's still young and improving from fight to fight. So, yeah, I mean, before you even look at the opponent, he's just going to be really hard to beat. And when you're hard to beat, you're going to win more often than not. Now, Victor Henry is a fighter that's had his moments in the UFC and, you know, peaked and then dropped. And he's good. He's a good fighter. He's a decent striker. He's got this crazy 10th Planet Jiu-Jitsu submission game, and he's got some good wrestling to go with it as well. And like, he's an entertaining fighter and one that will always bring the action inside the cage. But then, like I said, you've got Basharat on the other side, that if Victor Henry's coming in at 100 miles an hour, putting it all on Basharat, Basharat's the type of fighter that's just going to grab that pace and pressure and just take it away from Henry and slow it all down. And then that exposes a fighter like Victor Henry, because he thrives in the chaos. He thrives in the fast-paced, aggressive, in-your-face type of fight. And if Basharat takes that away from him, I think Basharat's just going to shine here. Again, it's nothing on Victor Henry because he's a good fighter. It's just Basharat is going to be so difficult to beat. And if you can't get the better of him in a fight, then you're not going to win. So even taking Basharat's offense out of this equation just for one moment, if you can't beat him, you're not going to win. So look, it's difficult. Basharat's a really, really good fighter, really good prospect. And after this fight, if he wins, you know, this is MMA, 4 ounce gloves at UFC level, one punch can change everything. But if Javid Basharat wins this fight, which I expect him to, and I expect him to finish as well, I really want him to fight a massive step up in competition for his next fight, just so we can see exactly where he's at. Even if the UFC give him too big of a step up and he comes a little bit short, that's fine. He's still young. He's still going to come back from it, but he'll learn from it. And it might be the best thing that happens to him, because at that point, he'll have felt the top 10. I really want a massive step up in competition for Basharat, because I believe he has the ability to compete there. So look, for this fight against Victor Henry, I think it's a tough one for Henry. I'm picking Javid Basharat to win this fight. So in the next fight, we've got Cedriquez Dumas versus Abu Azaitar. And this is a fight that's going to be really close. I think that you could argue either way in regards to who's going to win. Cedriquez Dumas, you know, he came in with the hype and, you know, he got that veteran fight straight off the bat in this first UFC fight. Fell short when he was supposed to win as a big favourite. And you know, came back then in his next fight and looked great. So we've seen two sides to Dumas. We've seen him fight the veteran and come up short, and then we've seen him in his next fight where the line was a little bit lower and people are expecting to see that first performance, but then we actually saw a good Dumas inside of there. Then you've got Abu Zaitar that has definitely contrasting performances. You know, he can look great in some fights, especially when he's, you know, unloading early and landing hard punches, but then he can, his cardio can fade and fall off a cliff, and if he gets taken down flattened on his back, he can have trouble. And that's where Cedriques Dumas does a good job of being able to take his opponents down. We saw in his last fight he was fighting another decent wrestler, in, or shall I say, more predominant wrestler and grappler, and he was able to nullify that fight. So against Abu Zaita, I definitely think the game plan for Dumas should be not to strike too much with him, not to risk eating that big punch, just take him down, get that gas tank out of him, you know, empty the tank and control the fight. And I think that that's what Dumas is going to do. I think maybe Dumas tests his striking early on. Maybe he tries to see what Zaitar's got for him to see if he's the better striker. Every fighter likes to think they're the better striker in a fight. So look, maybe he tries that. It's a risk in my opinion. But I do think the longer the fight goes on, I think Dumas' cardio is better. I think he can control where the fight takes place in regards to the wrestling as well. If he starts getting on a Zaitar on top of him, ground and pound, threatening submissions, making his Zaitar work, I think, like I say, it's going to empty the tank. We've seen it before. And I do think that Dumas, as long as he minds his P's and Q's, which again is one of the issues that one of the only issues I do have with him here, just because he doesn't have that experience yet at this level in the UFC where he will just go and take that easiest path to victory, and there will be moments of slight mistakes and errors and things like that that might allow Zaitar to get back in the fight or find something that puts him out. But outside of that, I think stylistically, Dumas has got a really good style for Abu Zaitar, and with the cardio advantage, in my opinion as well, I think that favours Dumas as well. So for those reasons, I'm picking Cedriques Dumas to win this fight. And in the next fight, we've got Anshul Jubli making his second UFC appearance versus Mike Breeden. Now, from Mike Breeden's perspective, he's definitely got more of a well-matched fight here than his previous three. Like, he's 0-3 in the UFC, fighting Alexander Hernandez, fighting Nathan Levy, fighting Terence McKinney. Like, those three dudes are really not fair for your first three UFC fights. So we're actually going to see Breeden, in my opinion, having a step down in competition. But Anshul Jubli is still a massive favourite in this fight, at like minus 400, I think he is. So why is Jubli that big of a favourite? Well, Jubli is actually a prospect himself, a fighter that I wasn't sure about him in his last, before his last fight. Like, I bet against him in his last fight because I'd seen some stuff on the regional scene for Jubli that looked great, but then he wasn't showing it in the road to UFC, you know, the Asian tournament that the UFC runs. So I was really unsure of, and what I'm talking about is the wrestling. Like, I saw him wrestle heavily on the regional scene, but not in the road to the UFC at all. So I actually wasn't expecting too much wrestling because I thought it's something he maybe gone past and fell in love with the striking. But then he came out in that first UFC, for his UFC debut, and, you know, performed really well, got the takedowns that he needed. And he's actually a really good wrestler. And I think it's going to help him in this fight against Breeden because Breeden's got heavy hands. Now, Jubli does have some defensive flaws striking. That's one of the things that I said about Jubli before I bet against him in his last fight in the UFC. And he can be got at. So that is definitely something that he's got to mind his P's and Q's and he's got to fix that up. But he's a young fighter that is going to be improving and developing from fight to fight. And I think for Breeden to win this fight, he's got to find that one punch that either does hurt, rock Jubli, or knocks him out. A punch that changes the course of the fight, because if he doesn't find that punch, I think that Jubli, he fights really tall, he fights really long, he's got good reach on both his arms and his legs, and then he does have this good wrestling game as well, and he's got a really controlled top game as well when it comes to the grappling. And I think Breeden is going to get stuck under him should Jubli wrestle, and I think Jubli will wrestle. I actually think there's going to be a kind of a few hairy moments for Jubli early in this fight because Breeden will come out fast and hard. Breeden's going to know that Jubli isn't at the level of an Alexander Hernandez and a Tan Levy or a Terence McKinney. So Breeden's going to come into this fight with a lot of confidence, thinking that, well, he's fought three much tougher guys already, and this is his moment to shine. So Jubli's got to mind that early in this fight, but ultimately I don't think Breeden finds that knockout, and I actually think that the takedown comes before the big punch lands, and that's going to be the, you know, the sort of MO of the fight, the MO of Jubilee and where he wants to take this fight. I think if he's smart, which he was in his last fight against a fighter that had extreme explosive power, I think he does the same again here. So yeah, look, I actually like Jubilee. If he keeps on improving and the way he uses his wrestling, now he can really mix things up in the UFC. If he just tidies up the striking defense and doesn't and stops becoming as hittable as what he's looked in previous fights, I think he could be a really interesting fighter, a bit of a dark horse in the division. So I'm picking Anshul Jubilee to win this fight. And in the next fight, we've got Nathaniel Wood versus Muhammad Naimov. And I think this is a really good fight for Nathaniel Wood, if I'm being honest. I think it's a step down in competition as well from where he's been fighting, and it's in Abu Dhabi, and he's on a stage where he can really shine. Like, look, Naimov's got power. We saw that last time out. Not many fighters land a punch on Jamie Malarkey that hurts him as badly as what he did, but we've got to take that fight for what it was, and that was a very slight mistake made from Jamie Malarkey that Naimov capitalized on and just hit him with the hardest punch that he could probably throw, and it landed clean as well. Now, prior to that moment, Jamie Malarkey was controlling that fight. You know, he was looking more technical, and Naimov was having a real difficult time in his UFC debut against Malarkey until that punch landed. Now, with Nathaniel Wood, he's probably going to have exactly the same issues. I think Wood's going to come forward. I think he's going to be more technical. I think Naimov's going to get really confused in regards to how he can get around what Wood's giving him and start to put a stamp on this fight himself. I think Wood's going to be the much better technical striker with more volume, more pressure, more pace. I think from a wrestling perspective, Wood's probably going to be better there as well. Topside grappling, Wood's really good. He's got a good submission game also. I think Naimov's going to really struggle in this fight. And I also think that if he's going to win this fight and beat Wood, he's going to have to do what he did to Jamie Malarkey, which actually is a possibility because, look, Jamie Malarkey is known for being tough, being in wars, and fighters have tried to do that to Malarkey through his career and not been able to do it just because the durability and the toughness is there of Malarkey. So for him to actually hurt Malarkey and take him out, it's quite impressive. Nathaniel Wood can be hurt as well. We saw that in his last fight against Andre Feely. So there is a possibility of Naimov finding that punch to knock Wood out. But it's going to be really difficult to pick against Wood in this fight just because he's so good everywhere. Wood is tough and durable. And look, like I said, I saw it last time out against Feely and being hurt. But Wood came back and won that fight. So he has been through adversity and numerous times in his career, come back winning fights. But like I said, from a mixed martial arts perspective, and when you look at the individual disciplines, the striking, the wrestling, the grappling, I think Wood's just better everywhere. And then when you add in the cardio, the pace, the pressure, and the level of experience that Wood has against the fighters that he's been fighting against Naimov, who didn't really look too impressive prior to coming into the UFC as well. Like I said, it's a tough one to pick against Wood. So for those reasons, I'm picking Nathaniel Wood to win this fight. And in the next fight, we've got Jinyu Fry versus Victoria Dudakova. Dudakova, second appearance in the UFC. It seems to be a bit of a theme for this card, if I'm being honest. But yeah, second time in the UFC. And well, I'm hoping to see more of her in the UFC this time. Look, her last fight was a disgusting finish, you know, from the arm snapping. And, you know, it was just not nice. If you're into all that, you know, limbs breaking and hyperextending and all that, then I'm sure you'll enjoy that last fight. But look, Dudakova is the type of fighter that will come out there and wrestle. She showed that in her last fight, and it was because her opponent posted on the arm from the takedown that, you know, ended up snapping the arm. So yeah, I think Dudakova is going to be dominant in this division. I think that she does need a couple of wins at this level with Jinyu Fry, with the likes of Jinyu Fry and other opponents in and around that same quality of UFC caliber fighter. But I think once she really starts putting win streaks together and starts to be comfortable and find herself in the UFC, I think she's going to be a real difficult fighter to beat. Of course she can strike, but she loves to wrestle. That's her MO, likes to get close, take her opponents down and work on the mat. And I think that's where Fry is going to get stuck. Fry is, in my opinion, more of a striker. She is well-rounded in her style, but definitely the Thai style of striking is where she does seem to prefer to fight, and are definitely against Victoria Dudakova. I think that she's going to see that as where she wins this fight, should she win. But the thing is, it's like, with Dudakova, she's got one of those styles of wrestling where you know it's coming, but can you do anything to stop it? And maybe once Dudakova starts fighting ranked women, different. But at this level against Fry, I don't think Fry is going to be able to stop the takedowns. I think Dudakova has got a good platform here to actually look good, you know, let people know who she is and, you know, be on that path to become a household name. I do think Dudakova can achieve those things. So, look, in the future, maybe she gets to that wall where, you know, she does get beat and she is fighting elite level competition in regards to being at the top of the division. But right now against Jinyu Fry, I think her wrestling's going to be too much, her topside grappling's going to be too much. And even from the striking perspective, even if you want to give Jinyu Fry the striking advantage, it's going to be nothing crazy at all. And that's if you give her the advantage. I don't think there's a massive gap in skill there. So yeah, I think the path to victory is solid for Dudakova. I'm picking Victoria Dudakova to win this fight. And finally, the last fight to break down. I don't even know if this is going to be the first fight on the card. I'd be shocked if the bout order wasn't recalculated somewhat, because this seems a bit crazy to be fight number one. We've got Bruno Silva versus Sharabutin Magomedov making his UFC debut. Now, Sharabutin Magomedov, I actually don't know if he only has one eye, or, well, he's obviously got two eyes, but I don't know if he's blind in one eye. Like, when you look at him, it does look like he is, but then there's conflicting articles and stories, and then I'm asking the question now if there's going to be conflicting stories so he can get medically cleared to fight. Like, I don't know. Like, if he is blind in one eye, then, yeah, it's a bit, I wouldn't say daft because he's a skilled fighter, but it's a bit crazy how he's got around being medically cleared. Maybe there's something that I don't know about and in regards to being medically cleared for that type of injury, but you know, I'm sure Bisping had to lie to be able to fight. So, look, I've got no idea. But then there are stories saying that they thought he was going to be blind, but then he had surgery and it was a success and now he can see out of it. So, I've got no idea. But, like, from a skill set and quality perspective, this dude is very, very good. He isn't your typical Russian. So, again, with a name like Sharabutin, Sharabullet Magomedov, you would think that he is a powerful Russian wrestler. And that just isn't the case. He can wrestle defensively, and it's similar to what I said about Saeed Nurmagomedov earlier on. Sharabutin Magomedov is predominantly a striker, a kickboxer, but a very good one. Like, he's really good moving backwards. Like, fighters do try and put it on Magomedov, but his defense seems to be world class. Like, he ends up evading a lot of punches, making fighters miss, and he's very fast in and out of range as well. So he can strike himself, and when it's coming back on him, he'll be gone and he'll be nowhere to be seen when the strikes are coming at him, and then he'll come back in again. He looks like he's going to be a pretty frustrating fighter to fight against in the UFC, and I think Bruno Silva might fall into that frustration here, because look, Bruno Silva's a striker himself. He's a powerful striker. He's got deceptive power as well. Like, some of the punches that he lands and hurts, rocks, wobbles and knocks his opponents out with, some of them don't even look that powerful, but they clearly are landing very hard. But the thing is with Silva, his movement's quite static, more of that Thai style, which is no surprise coming out of the Ever Lu Cao Muay Thai camp. And it's very static and, you know, patient and stalking type of approach. And I think that for Bruno Silva to land on Magomedov, he's really got to be light on his toes and really work hard here. And I just don't see Silva being able to do that. And if he does, I don't see him being able to do it for a full three rounds. I think he'd tire out just because it's not really his style. And then the other side to it is, look, Magomedov can hit hard. He doesn't put power into his shots, like overexerts himself or anything like that. But when he connects, he does connect with power. And this is the other thing with Bruno Silva. We've seen him hurt. Like, he was dropped and rocked against guys like Brendan Allen and Gerald Meerschaert, who are predominant grapplers, not known for the striking and definitely not known for the power. So being hurt against those guys does make me a little bit concerned for him here against Magomedov, who is an elite striker, or it seems like an elite striker, who does pack power and has got plenty of finishes, but he can also go three rounds as well. We've seen him win a decision. We've seen him finish a fight in round three. So I think it's a tough fight for Bruno Silva. It wouldn't be one that I would be shocked if he came in and did find that punch and, you know, was the guy to give Magomedov a nightmare opening first fight in the UFC, because this isn't a fighter that I think the UFC are feeding Magomedov to absolutely go in there and destroy. Like, Bruno Silva's a good striker, so it's not one that I think the UFC are like, oh, we'll give him a fighter from the lower barrel in UFC caliber fighters, if that makes sense. Bruno Silva's a legit fighter, but stylistically, I think Magomedov has got such a good striking game that he's going to be able to evade what Silva throws at him and be able to land on Silva and potentially hurt him as well. I think Sharabutin Magomedov is going to be a fighter to watch out for in the UFC. Defensively, from a wrestling and grappling perspective, that's where we have seen the majority of his wrestling. He has been taken down, but man, you've got to work hard for it. And he has got a really good get-up game as well. So he's definitely got the anti-wrestling, anti-grappling to be able to complement his elite striking style. So yeah, I think that there's some concerns on Bruno Silva's side from a durability perspective, but I think it's just going to be difficult for him to find Magomedov. For those reasons, I'm picking Sharabutin Magomedov to win this fight. And that's all for this episode of the podcast. A little bit longer than normal, but of course, stack card, amazing main event, amazing co-main event, 13 really good fights overall. So yeah, a little bit more time was put into them within the breakdowns and, you know, trying to share my thoughts on a card that, you know, is going to be very, very difficult to find value and, you know, be able to place bets that just don't have an insane amount of chalk on them. But of course, with Charles Oliveira and Paulo Costa pulling out of the main event and co-main events, the lines have shortened up. Again, if you fancy a bet on those, then you know you've got a better line than what you had with the previous two fights. But anyway, enough of the rambling. I'm done now. We're on to a 1 week break next week, so there's no UFC next week, which means there'll be no podcast. We'll be back the week after, although I will put out a Baze AI recap next week from this event at UFC 294, so make sure you check that out next week, which will be on our YouTube channel. And again, if you are on YouTube, please like the video, please subscribe. If you want to drop a comment, tell me your thoughts about this card. And I'm sure there's going to be a lot of contrasting opinions on the Volkanovski in the Usman side, because people are going to find betting the underdog in an elite fight appealing, and I get that. So look, let's have a chat. Talk to me on YouTube. If you are listening to one of our podcasts on one of our podcast platforms like Spotify, Amazon Music, Apple Music, if you want to head over to YouTube and have a chat, you know, tell me your thoughts on the card and who you're betting, all that good stuff, then make sure you do that. And I'm out of here. I'm Newsom. Thanks for listening. I'll see you again in 2 weeks' time.